Hi, hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined, as usual, by Matt Oper. How's it going, Matt?
It is going better and better because we're closer and closer to football season. We are almost out of the wilderness.
It's just 1 week. By the time many people listen to this, it'll be less than a week until kickoff. That's pretty exciting news.
Yeah, I mean, this is the most excited I've been for a season since year one of the Tupperville era, I think. And that didn't go so hot. Hopefully this year is better. And there's a lot to be excited about, even if the results this year aren't going to go to everyone's liking, as they're most likely not. But the future is bright.
Yeah, that's the most important thing, I think, about this season, is that there's a bright future for the team. And, like, we talked about it before, but, like, things can't be worse than they were last season, right?
No. Mass apathy, everybody hating everyone, nobody seeming to give much of a shit about what was happening on the field. It can't be worse than that. Even if the record would be the same, it would not be that bad.
There'd be at least be some sort of hope that, like, the team was better performing than they were. I mean, they definitely can't be too much worse. At least, like, we know the coaching staff won't just give up on the season. Right?
Yeah, I mean, last year was, according to the simple rating system, was the worst UC football season in almost 15 years. You got to go back to 2005 to see a season that was as bad.
And that was a transition year, so really, last year was even worse, all things considered. So at least they weren't, so at least 2005 team, they were playing Conference USA talent in the Big East, back when the Big East was pretty stacked.
And they were playing freshmen, like nothing but freshmen everywhere. That was when the Mike Mickens, Terrell Byrd era started, was with that team, and they played as young pups, and they formed the basis of, you know, championship teams down the road. And it might be a similar situation with this, because by all accounts, there's going to be a lot of freshmen playing this year. Freshmen and sophomores and just young people in general. A lot of the seniors, upperclassmen, but quite a few of them have transferred out. There are some holdovers, but there's been a ton of turnover. And that's just standard with a new coach. That happens everywhere. People either see that they're not going to get the opportunity because the young kids will get that, and they're not going to, you know, it is a zero-sum game after all for a lot of these players, where if they're not playing, someone else is taking their playing, so they're going to go somewhere where they can get a chance. Perfectly understandable. But that leaves a lot of young kids as the second-line depth for this team, which can be good or bad. I like a lot of the starters. I like the depth, especially on the defensive line. But after that first, you know, wave or so, it gets kind of dicey.
Yeah, like, that's really where their strength is. Like, unbelievably, if you watch the team last year, it's, like, really on defense. There's just so much questions about depth off on the other side of the ball. Where, like, you have a ton of new receivers, no proven running backs behind Mike Boone, no proven quarterbacks behind Hayden Moore and Ross Trail. And Ross Trail is currently injured. And, like, even the line, we know that was a mess last year, and that's not like it got, like, a ton better this year. That's going to be really up to the defense to, like, learn on the job pretty quick. And same for the offense, but the defense seems like it was the strong point last year.
Yeah, it definitely was, without a doubt, and it will be again this year. That is the strength of this team. how far you can go with that, what you can do with playing basically one side of football, who knows? We really don't know what the offense is going to be. Literally, we have no idea what the offense is going to be. Mike Denbrock really doesn't have much of a track record as a coordinator. We don't know what the identity will be. We don't know what they're going to try to do. Presumably, Mike Boone will be the future of the offense. But if the offensive line doesn't get vastly better, that's not going to go much better than it did last year, where it seemed that running backs were averaging 2 yards and then falling into a pile of bodies at the line. That just seemed to be what happened every single time the handoff. There's so many unknowns with this team that, yeah, literally anything could happen.
Which does make a lot of sense why they have a bye game, a layup game to start the season with Austin Peay. Let's jump in the Austin Peay preview. So Cincinnati should win this game very handily. Do you agree?
Yes, I do. And thus concludes our preview.
I think that the biggest thing to come away from this game is just how they look. Like, if they come out like on fire and put together a very strong quarter, like at first quarter, and like carry it through the rest of the game, I think that's a pretty good sign. Because we saw last year they came out terribly, and that game was really bad. And they could have lost easily to whoever they played. I can't remember. But like, to avoid something like that would be nice.
Yeah, I mean, Tennessee Martin should have beat them last year. Like, should have. They were comfortably the better team for the first half. The second half, the Bearcats, played better, obviously. They got to a win, but there was nothing to be excited about coming out of that game. The thing with this team is going to be how, like, the fans have completely bought into the Luke Fickle era. At least they appear to be, based on the recruiting, their presence on social media. They seem to have really energized this fan base once again. And, the easiest way to tell that, there's going to be 35,000 people in the stands for this game. That's the expected crowd, according to Mike Bone. That's pretty good for an also-ran team that you're playing, coming off one of the most disastrous seasons it's not one of the most disastrous seasons in UC football history. There have been many, many, many. But for where the program had been for the last 15 years, last year was an abject disaster. There's just no getting around that fact. There is now a standard that has to be upheld. And this year is all about getting back to that standard. And even if they don't actually achieve it, even if they don't win 9 or 10 games and spend a little bit of time in the polls and get ranked and have a couple of big wins against conference foes, which will be there. South Florida is starting out the year ranked. It's about laying the groundwork for that process. And we just need to see tangible results on that front.
Yeah, absolutely. But coming away with real things to grow and build on is definitely what we should all be hoping and expecting to start the season. Just like looking through Austin Peay's schedule last year, what you were talking, and they gave up at least 34 points in every game last year, including 67 to Eastern Kentucky. So yeah, they're probably not going to be very good. How many points would you be comfortable with UC scoring? Like, do they have to score like 45 for you to come away happy with this game?
Yeah, I mean, like, I would expect to score in the 40s, just based on the difference in talent. If they allow more than a touchdown or two, and depending on the circumstances of those, I would be concerned about the direction of the season going forward, because if you're supposed to rely on your defense and you give up, 14 points to an also-ran in the FCS, that's not a great sign.
Yeah, but it would be acceptable if one of those came in garbage time. But yeah, you don't want to see like them like having a close game in the first half. Like anytime you play a team that was 0-11 the season before, like you really don't want to like have the game be in like any sort of doubt. So like it should be a pretty huge win, a nice win for Luke Fickell's first game. Just like the Toledo game for Gunnar Kiel and Tommy Tupperville. Minus that one terrifying part where Toledo started coming back. Which really wasn't that bad in hindsight.
Yeah, and there is... The thing about this Austin Peay game is that, you know, UT Martin is a good FCS team. They're not a great one. They're not a national title contender, but they are a solid program at that level. You know, they're predicted to finish, I think, second in the OVC this year. Austin Peay's predicted ninth out of nine in the same conference. So it's a drastic step down in talent for them. This should be an absolute romp. It should not be a game into the second half at all.
It'd be disappointing if it was remotely close. Who do you expect to start at quarterback? We should run to that well one more time, since Luke Fickell hasn't announced a starting quarterback. They were going to announce it a couple days ago, but Ross Trail is injured, as mentioned, and he decided to wait. So we know it's going to be Moore or Trail, and I guess it depends if Trail can't practice as we get closer to game time. Seems like it would just be Moore. But with him waiting, it seems like there's a pretty good chance that Trail has opened some eyes and might have a shot at getting the job.
I'm always wary of reading too much into this kind of stuff because, you know, they're football coaches. They're not, you know, they're not working for Mossad. They're not that secretive, and they're not that good at being secretive. Hayden Moore will probably start. The fact that they have not already said that Hayden Moore is going to start just basically indicates that they were happy with the performance that Trail put in. And, you know, if it was a different preseason, if he didn't get injured, he might have a chance to win that starting job, but it's probably going to be Hayden Moore. I mean, if you're asking me who's going to be the starting quarterback at the end of the season, I just don't think it... I think it will be Trail, because I think there's too much on the board in terms of results, evidence, whatever you want to call it, that Hayden Moore is just an average quarterback. And you can be average with an average quarterback as your starter, but, you know, you're looking down the road for who's going to give you the higher ceiling down the road. It's not Hayden Moore, it's Ross Trail. So that's why I think I'd eventually go that way.
And it seems like there's a part where they don't want to announce a quarterback when Trail's hurt to make it seem like Trail lost the job because he was hurt. We've seen that happen.
That's definitely part of it.
I think we're agreed that Trail's going to end up playing sometime this season. It's kind of like last year where if the schedule gets tough and if Moore struggles, he's probably going to get benched.
Yeah, that seems like a non-shocking outcome. I've said it plenty. There's really no point to go into the depths of it again. But I just don't think Inmore is that good. I think he's perfectly fine. I think he's perfectly capable, but against better teams, against better defenses, more sophisticated defenses, he doesn't have a track record of getting it done. And for the record, neither does Ross Trail, but I trust his pedigree and his talent more. Because talent can get you through things where making the wrong decision isn't quite as disastrous because you can execute your bad decision better, if that makes sense. If you are just an average quarterback and you make bad decisions, you're far more likely to be... You're not going to get away with those at the same frequency.
How much of the quarterback stuff do you think just has to do with, like, we've seen Hayden Moore a lot more, like, a lot more frequently than we've seen Trail? So if I gave you just, like, based what you saw off a trail last season, like, it seemed like it would be ridiculous for him to start. I'm trying to play devil's advocate here.
No, and that's the most popular guy in ACOG's town is a backup quarterback. That's an old saying that is as true today as it was then. You know, because we're always tantalized by the potential of something that is not known, right? It's like, we know this guy, right? But this guy could be way better. We just haven't seen it. Well, you haven't seen it because you didn't win the job in practice, and the people who watch this every day with a microscope and watch film of these guys constantly don't see it. That's why we don't see it. So, yeah, but it could be so much better. Yes, but we don't have proof. And, like, there have been so many examples of that just in the recent UC. Like, you know, the biggest win in UC history is the Rutgers game. Starting quarterback all year that season was Dustin Grimson. He didn't start that game. It was Nick Davila. Now, he started because Grimson was injured. But he came out, he performed brilliantly, and 5,000 people in the stands were like, I told you all year this guy was better. Yeah, how do you know? You just didn't like the starter. That's an old trope in college football. And it could be the case with this, and, you know, they could shock everybody, give Trail the ball, and he just plays terribly. Could happen. But, you know, this is a guy who was recruited by half the schools in the SEC. He had ACC offers. He had power offers, right? And any other year, he would have gone to Arkansas because Arkansas doesn't produce quarterbacks that frequently. But this was – his senior year was one year when they had two high-quality quarterbacks, and the Hogs could only take one, right? So it wasn't him. And because of that, he ends up at UC through a, you know, a convoluted series of events, also known as recruiting. But, like, it's not like this kid isn't talented. He's probably the most talented quarterback on the roster. And I would say he's by far the most talented quarterback on the roster. He just hasn't had a chance to perform yet. And, you know, he played last year, but no one last year was putting anything close to a position to succeed on offense. Like, there was no plan, no identity, nothing. So, like, we could have had Tony Pike out there. Tony Pike probably would look like peak Tony Pike pre-forearm break would have looked terrible in that offense. It was that badly conceived, that badly designed, and that badly executed.
And, like, as to continue on with what you're going with, it was kind of hard to get really a good read on Trail when it seemed like every time he made a mistake, he would just get pulled from the game. Now, granted, he made some pretty terrible mistakes with some of his passes, but he didn't really get the chance to, didn't really get the net that seemed like Moore or even Keel had in their time as starter.
Yeah, I mean, like, the way that they treated Ross Trail last year, it reminds me of it's how Mick Cronin has treated Justin Jennifer over the last couple of years. It's like, he does one thing really well, but if the quarterback doesn't value the thing you do well, you're not going to get a chance. And Ross Trail can throw it a mile, and he's very mobile, and is probably the best running quarterback on this team. They didn't really value anything other than his running. Well, if all you're going to do is signal to the defense in big, bold letters, hey, this guy's here, we're going to run, it's probably going to be power or a quarterback draw. Is he really being put in a position to succeed? Like, having those kind of trick packages is fine, but you have to build counters off that. And they just had the trick package, and like, this is going to work every time. No one's ever going to see this coming. It's like, oh, yeah, the backup's in. He's going to do some running.
And, Miami, like, you can't really make it an excuse for the Miami game, but you just didn't play well. Like, South Florida was probably the best team they played last year. Even better than Houston, I think. And, of course, like, he struggled in his first start against an actual good team. He still did go 20 for 30, but only 216 yards. Like, his running is going to be a big key to the season, I think. Same with Moore, because you're going to have to get something out of your quarterbacks from the ground. Especially since, I don't know, do we really know what Mike Boone's going to bring to the table? Can he, like, be the full-time running back? That's the big question with the offense right now. This is, like, can Mike Boone bounce back from whatever happened last year and be, like, the runner we saw his first two seasons?
That is the big question. And I think that is part of the reason why I think Ross Dreher is ultimately going to get the job, because they're going to need his running just to give them, you know, to ameliorate some of their numbers disadvantage in the box, because Hinmore's not a threat as a runner. He's just not. He's okay. He's passable, but he's not a threat. Ross Dreher is a threat as a runner to any defense. So, you know, the reason why the spread offense has become the de facto college offense, I mean, like, it's a useless term, I know that. We're not going to go into that today. But briefly, in the traditional offense with a quarterback as a non-threat as a runner, the defense has an advantage because there's one running back and only 9 potential blockers, right? So they can focus all 11 defenders on the running back if they want to. If you have a running quarterback, that changes the math, and it gives you another quote-unquote blocker in a quarterback who can run, because you have to assign someone to that quarterback, otherwise he's just going to, you know, run for a million yards. Yeah, the offensive line is a huge question mark. You know, it's been bad for a very long time. Like, we have not had a good line here probably in 5 or 6 years. Is it going to be better this year? I'm crossing my fingers. I hope. But even if it's not, you need to find some way to help them out. And having a running quarterback does help those guys out a little bit, because it just changes the numbers for them and makes it a little bit easier to create creases for the running backs or the quarterbacks, in this case, to, you know, gain yards. And that is where Trail's value is going to be to start. And if you can expand on from that, then you got an offense. If you have a quarterback who can run it a little bit, who changes the numbers, and is capable of stretching the field vertically as he can with these receivers and his arm, that's a powerful combination. That's why I think he will eventually get the job. But I just, at this point, there's no indication that he's going to be starting against Austin Peay.
Yes, it definitely seems like they're leaning more. He started, like, pretty much all throughout camp, and he's still starting now. Like, you see, Trail had a big scrimmage game that pushed him up in the race, but I don't know. Like, we said it before, it just seems like they're going to lean for experience, especially with the new system being put in yet again.
Yeah, and that's, we've talked about the quarterbacks for months now. And we've landed on the same spot where we're at now. It's probably going to be Moore. We all seem to like Trail more because he's the unknown. But you did bring up a great question. Like, so Mike Boone, is he just going to be a 1,000-yard runner? Maybe. Maybe not. That is, they seem to be hitching their wagon to that particular horse. But we don't know if he can hold up under that. And if he does, who's he got behind him? I mean, we've heard a lot about Jared Doakes, the running back from Indianapolis. And he looks the part of a solid combo with Boone because he's a little bit bigger, a little bit more physical. But he's a redshirt freshman. We really don't know anything about him, anything at all. Now, that's another thing where, you know, we haven't been in this position for a while where it's just like, I haven't even seen these guys. What are they like? There's so many of those guys on this offense that, you know, you got Devin Gray and you got Khalil Lewis at receiver. Who's the third? J.J. Pinkney? It's looking that way. What's he like? He's 6'3 and athletic. That seems good. But nobody's seen him play receiver because he got stuck at cornerback for 2 years. And, you know, he was put in a position where he didn't want to play to the point where he almost quit the team. But he's back and he's playing receiver where he probably should have been all along. So what's it going to be like? Who knows?
I know people have talked about it and written about it, but like your second leading rusher coming back is Khalil Lewis, who was a receiver last season and this season. So, like, you really have complete unknowns at running back. And the way college football is now, like, unless you have, the Pumphrey from San Diego State last year, or with the Alabama just, like, monster running backs, you don't really see, like, one guy get, like, a ton of carries. It's mostly split. And from, like, just what we saw from Boone last year, it's, like, so hit and miss. I guess, obviously, some of it was, like, the whatever they called for him. But he only had 2 games over 40 yards last year, which is a gigantic red flag. And he only scored 2 rushing touchdowns. That's really something to be worried about. Especially since, like, he was so, popped off the tape his first 2 seasons. And he had same amount of carries last year. So it's not like he got any less carries. He was just less productive for whatever reason.
Yeah, and that's the biggest problem with the offense last year, is that there were no explosive plays if it was not just a wild, you know, heave down the sideline to either Lewis or Gray. The explosive plays were not there. And you don't need to have 30, 40-yard plays every drive to be successful. But you do need to have, 10-yard plays. Big chunk plays make everything in life easier. Yeah, because they've talked about wanting to run a faster tempo. And you see, the reason they were slow is, if you don't have successful plays, it doesn't matter how fast you go. You have to have 5-yard gains, 6-yard gains, 7-yard gains before you can really push the tempo. Because if you run at the fastest tempo you possibly can and are gaining 3 yards of play, you are getting off the field in record time and your defense will play 45 minutes. And no defense can do that. I mean, that's basically what Clemson did to Alabama. They didn't have an enormous amount of explosive plays in that title game. Well, what they did have was just a never-ending stream of 5- and 6-yard plays. And they used those 5- and 6-yard plays to push the tempo. They got off 100 plays against Alabama. And by the end, that defense couldn't move, especially those linemen. And that's, the best defense that this sport offers is traditionally, for the last 10 years, has been Alabama. I mean, that just shows the kind of effect that can have on you. But you can't do that as an offense if you can't get those basic plays. If you can't get 6 yards of play, you're not going to get any 20, 30, 40-yard gains, because you're never going to have a defense in a position where they can't function. I mean, you'll get some randomly, but you're not going to get them systematically. And that's kind of what every offense in college football is trying to do, is create those scenarios where they can get big plays, not randomly, but in a systematic way. And UC hasn't been able to do that for several years now.
Yeah, definitely. Some of the articles that we've all seen, because there's 4 places that write articles professionally, and it's been what happened to the big plays? Offensively and defensively, here comes the attacking defense again. What happened to the big offense? At some point, you just have to be a consistent offense, which is something we didn't see last year. They were very bad. Here's some Mike Boone trivia. Guess how many plays last season he had over 20 yards?
0.
I'm counting receptions, too.
Oh, 1?
Yeah, 2. He had that 50-yard catch against East Carolina, and he caught, a 30-yard pass. Yeah, his longest run was 18 yards.
Wow.
Even if you go back to the final 3 games of 2015, he struggled mightily in those games as well. USF, he had 28 yards. East Carolina, 56 yards. The bowl game against San Diego State, he had 8 carries, 32 yards. So it's been kind of a little trend. Maybe people picked up something on tape about either how he's running or how you see sets up for his runs. But with the new coaching staff, like, hopefully that would be a lot different. It'll be less predictable.
But it's not just Mike Boone. They had five rushes of 20 yards last year. And they had one rush of 30, 40, 70, on. It was Khalil Lewis's 79-yard rush that made him the second leading returner. That 79-yard end-around touchdown. That was the longest 30-yarder, 40, etc. Like, that's what we're talking about. That's how bad they were at generating explosive plays. It's not sustainable. Like, you can't win football games like that.
It's like, out of your big runs, you had definitely had one by Lewis. You had one by Hayden Moore. And I'm looking through Trail's stats real quick. Now, he didn't break a 20-yard run. So, yeah, that means like your running backs had three 20-yard runs the whole season, which is really, really not good.
Not good is a massive understatement. That is atrocious. Yeah, and that's really where the question is going to be for the team again this year, is on this offense. You know, generally, offenses break down into either being efficient or being explosive. Some, the best, are both. UC checked the neither box, which really isn't an option, but they checked it anyways with a vengeance last year. I mean, they were so bad. They were not efficient. They were not explosive. They were just bad in a way that seems unthinkable for a program whose recent rise is all about the offense.
Yeah, and like I think that's what makes the offense such a giant question mark coming into this season. Like, you mentioned the unproven coordinator earlier who didn't call plays at all in Notre Dame. And you have really an unproven defensive coordinator as well, who the big knock on him is like they just brought him in for recruiting purposes. It's like you do at least get a bit of an adjustment with Austin Peay to start the season. But you get like a gigantic reality check right after that. We'll kind of know how good the coaching staff is with the first three road games. Like, they got like from like right into the fire to pretty much start the season.
Yeah, and that's honestly, this team needs, so that's not all bad. You know, this is a group that's going to be a much more cohesive, better running, better functioning team in November than they are in September. I think everybody knows that going in. You know, the question is, can they pick up enough wins in this first month that they can not be scrambling to get a bowl in the final year? And by the way, the history of UC first-year coaches, it's not great. Like, it's not great. I think there are three in the last 60 years who had winning seasons in their first season. So, no bueno. Yeah.
Run us through the history real quick of the UC coaches in their first year, just for fun.
Okay, so Tommy Tuberville, 9-4 in the first year. Not bad. Butch Jones, 4-8. This number there, that 4, that's a recurring theme. Brian Kelly, he's a god, whatever. Mark D'Antonio, 7-5. He quickly slumped back to 4-7 in 2005. Let's go down to Rick Minner. Ooh, 2-8-1. Not bad. Not bad. Tim Murphy, 1-9-1. Dave Curry, 2-9. Dave Curry, by the way, the coach who let his kicker run a limo and ride it onto the field for the first day of practice. Moving on, Watson Brown, 4-6-1. Solid. Mark Gottfried, 6-5. Hey, there we go. There's number 3. Ralph Stubb, 5-4-2. Tony Mason, 4-7. Ray Callahan, 4-6. Homer Rice, 3-6. Charles Studley, not Studley at all, 3-7. George Blackburn, 1-6-2, and that is the entirety of first-year coaches going back to 1955.
At least he tied twice. That's good.
Good on you, George Blackburn, with your ties. By the way, George Blackburn, he followed off from Sid Gilman, so that was a massive crash and burn.
Yeah. I think the thing that does stand out is even like some of the coaches that had good records, even then, like a bit of a disappointing drop-off in their first season. Like Tuberville, like they did win 9 games, but that team was favored to win the league, and they were out of league contention by week like 3. And that team should have won double-digit games with all the talent they had. Like Butch Jones coming off the like miracle year where they almost went to the national title game. Like a step back was like definitely going to happen. But like a stepping back that far
was... Well, yeah, but you don't like expect a broad jump backwards. You expect a step.
Yeah, even like if Vidal Hazelton was healthy, like that wouldn't have helped anything, I don't think.
No, because that team's problem was Derek Wolfe and John Hughes had to play 80 snaps a game. Just had to. There was literally no one else. That was the problem. Those guys were really good. They're both still in the NFL. You know, that's high-quality defensive tackle play that generally you don't get at UC. Historically, that's an outlier. But, yeah, they can't play 80 snaps a game. Oh, and that was also when they played Walter Stewart at linebacker, so that was fun.
Oh, that magical year where they just go, yeah, let's just take our best defensive end and move his position.
Totally, totally. That's a great idea.
Season did have the Pete game, which is still one of the craziest games like just to randomly ever happen.
Yeah. Oh, Isaiah, I miss you. Yeah, so, like, this is, if Fickell is going to get this team to a bowl, which is possible, I think that's a realistic goal for this group, it's going to take either a defense that turns out to be not, you know, top 40-ish, which is what I'm expecting, but, you know, top 20-ish possible. The defensive line's big, deep, nasty, mean. That's a good start. But they're replacing so much leadership in the back end with Zach Edwards now moving on. You know, Eric Wilson was the leading tackle on the team, no longer with us. There's a lot to replace in that back seven. And that's really where I think the defense is going to either turn out to exceed the expectations or just go ahead and beat it. Because it's not like they're playing complete noobs in that group. Especially that secondary. There are guys with a lot of experience there. But we need a giant leap forward from everybody in terms of production, especially when it comes to pressuring the quarterback, getting them on the ground, getting sacks, getting disruptive plays. That really wasn't their MO under Tuberville. They need to change that. And I think, by all accounts, this is going to be a much more aggressive, forward-thinking, in-your-face kind of team. So hopefully doesn't take time. Hopefully that doesn't take time. It just kicks in right away. That's really the biggest question for me.
What's your opinion on the linebackers? We haven't really gone into that too much. So like you mentioned Wilson, he's gone. Kennard had like a gigantic tackle season last season. He's gone. Some of the guys ended up playing quite a bit, like Miner and like Jacobs. Like, where do you think... Do you think the production is going to continue? Like, these guys are going to step up? Or do you think there's going to be, like, a noticeable drop-off with the linebackers this season?
I'm cautiously optimistic about how that group is going to perform. Just because Freeman is a very good defensive... He was a linebacker himself. That was his point in trade. That's where he got started as a coach, is coaching linebackers. He's a coordinator now, but he's going to work a lot with the group. And I think that is going to be a huge asset for this group. They're going to be playing kind of a hybrid nickel scheme again this year, which is interesting because Leviticus Payne was kind of the ideal hybrid strong side linebacker because he was basically a safety who played there. And they got Chris Murphy, who is going to slot into that position. But he hasn't played. You know, he's talented. You know, this was a guy who was signed by Arkansas. He was going to be an SEC player. So the talent's there. Can he do the job? We're going to find out. Like, I like – they have a high potential to perform at a very high level. That's my overall take on the linebacker group. But it's just potential at this point. There's no proven production, which is an issue.
Yeah, I think like we've been like kind of lucky, like with UC linebackers, where they've had like a nice stream of like very well performing linebackers the past like decade. Hopefully that continues. Like, I'm gonna give like the coaching staff like the benefit of the doubt. Like, hopefully some of these guys turn out to be players. How do you feel about the secondary? Like, we both seem optimistic about the secondary. But like, if you just like mention like Lyndon Stevens or Grant Coleman, like a portion of the fan base gets like bad flashbacks and like cowers in terror.
Yeah, but I think like Stevens was really good last year, and I think he's going to be a leader of this group again. Coleman, I'm more agnostic about. I don't have a high opinion of him one way or the other. I think he's improved significantly from when he first broke through and was playing major minutes as a sophomore. But, you know, there's not a high ceiling there. Yeah, overall, this group is – they're really going to miss Zach Edwards is ultimately what it's going to come down to. Yeah, they got Gilbert. They have Carter Jacobs. There's guys there. There's guys who have played. There's some talent there. But playing secondary, especially playing safety, it's more about your overall understanding of the structure of the defense. Seeing weak spots before the offense can, you know, getting guys lined up properly. I mean, that's half the battle, honestly, with secondary play, playing against five receivers. It's just getting a hat on a hat and making sure that everybody's covered within the scheme of your defense, whatever it is, whether you're playing cover two or cover five, you know. And that leadership void is going to be the interesting thing to watch because we don't really know who's going to take that role, who's going to end up being the quarterback of this defense. It's kind of an open question. It could end up being Stevens, but generally that's not a cornerback's role. That's not what they do.
And normally it's like one of the safeties as the take charge guy on the defense, or at least the secondary. It's like maybe it'd be somebody who was like Jacobs, who's been in the program for a long time. Like you do have like some experience, but it's like those guys just haven't seemed to play a ton outside of Stevens and Coleman. And Coleman, didn't he bounce around to safety last season? Now he's backlisted at cornerback. So I guess they'll toss him around the secondary. See what fits.
Yeah, and that's really what this year is going to be about. Well, like I said it before, we'll continue to say it. It's about finding the pieces that fit what they want to do. Yeah, I'm talking about the staff in this case, what they want to do. You never really know in year one what you're trying to be. You might have some ideas. You might have some vague inclinations of what you're overall plan is, but generally you're not. It's like anything else. The first year in the job, you have no idea what you're doing. I mean, you kind of do because you got the job, but the individual details of that job, you don't know until you encounter them. You know, you don't know the flow of it until you start actually go through it, and that's really what this year is about. So that they can set up strongly for, you know, year two, which is traditionally when a coach makes a leap, if he's going to make a leap. So I think, you know, just to be frank, a lot of the guys who start against Austin Peay will not be in their rotation, will not be contributors at the end of the year. That's just how this always goes in year one of a coach.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, especially some like the younger guys, like they might have a great chance to move up into the starting lineup. or at least get a majority of the snaps, while some of the older guys, like, kind of fade out of the picture. It seems like year one, like, they lean a lot on experience coming back, just because those guys can pick out things up faster. But then, like, once you, like, you get tape and, like, the guys get more comfortable, like, freshmen stop being freshmen, it seems like that's the time of the year when those guys step up and end up taking a big spot on the team. Like, we've kind of seen it with guys like Edwards, and even, like, Lyndon Stevens, I don't think started his freshman year. But, like, by last year, he was, like, one of the big staples of the secondary.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, Stevens played a little bit as a freshman, but it was sparingly. Yeah. Like, Zach Edwards is, I mean, he's part of this, but he's also such an outlier because he came in and started day one and just never left. Like, he was just in that spot and just was there for the next 50 games. Like, he just was like, oh, yeah, there's Zach. He's still there. Cool. He became more, you know, everybody talks about having 6-7 years because it seemed like he was just there forever. And, you know, that's very much the case, and that's why he's going to be so hard to replace with his leadership. You know, it could turn out that some of these freshmen who are going to play are going to be like that. They're going to have to be like that, you know, because there's just spots where there's just nobody with the upper, you know, in the classroom who's ready to play. It seems like it's a solid mix in the secondary of experience and youth. But we don't know which is where the balance is. Is it too young to be effective at a high level, or is it, you know, or do they have the experience, but they're just not physically talented enough to do what the coaching staff is asking them, you know? And that's something that can really only be sorted out with game film and seeing them play. And that's why, you know, I always love these first couple of weeks because everything's an unknown. Yeah, there are some flaws on this team. I mean, we've talked just extensively about how the offense kind of terrifies all of us. But the defense is not that way, even though they have some spots where you're like, well, I think it's going to work out, but I don't really know how. I don't have specifics. Yeah. And I kind of enjoy that dichotomy. I kind of enjoy the low-grade anxiety that just runs through weeks, you know, 1 through 4, before you realize either, oh, yeah, this team's okay, or, oh, shit, this is going to be a bad year. Like, last year, I will say this for Tuberville. He spared us of that and just let us know that he was going to be shit from the start.
Yeah, it took, like 3 weeks, 4 weeks to really get that message. I guess you could go to even the UConn game. So it gave you like 6 weeks before you knew you could check out for good. It's like after Miami, you're like, oh no. Like after they get beat down by South Florida at home, like, oh, they're not very good. Then they like lose to UConn. It's like, oh, season's over. Goodbye.
Yeah. And however the season plays out, it's going to be better than last year. Even if they go like 2-10, I will feel better about it. Am I hopelessly naive? Probably. But yeah, I just think that with the amount of youth they're going to play, like, look at the linebackers. This is kind of a perfect example of what I'm talking about. All three starters last year are gone. Just gone. Just bye-bye. They do have, you know, a lot of three-star prospects, a lot of guys who were pretty highly regarded, who were recruited, who basically they recruited over power programs to get, right? That encourages me. And linebacker is the easiest spot to replace production on any defense just because they have cover up front and in back. And if you're strong up front and you're strong in back, your linebackers can be okay. They might be just okay, but they're probably not going to be a disaster. So we're going to see how this plays out. Like, they got, yeah, I really don't know who is actually going to end up being starters. Yeah, I've heard good things about RJ Potts, the true freshman from Indiana. I think it's Fort Wayne, actually. he was a four-star recruit. He was the highest-ranked recruit in last year's class. He is an undersized linebacker, which historically is my favorite. Like, sign me up for another Nick Temple, please. But he's going to be a freshman. Yeah, all these guys are going to be freshmen. So they're going to make mistakes. But it's probably not going to matter as much in the outcomes of games because they get to play. They have the luxury to play behind a really, really good defensive line. You know, Houston's got the best in the conference because they have the best defensive player in the country. But this group isn't bad, and that's going to help out these linebackers. And if they can get a little bit more quarterback pressure, a few more sacks, it's going to help out the secondary too.
How much does the secondary worry you with how much, like, production they lost? It's like you mentioned it a bit ago. But, like, they lost Edwards and, like, Tyson, whatever hybrid role he played. And, what's his face? The guy who got kicked off the team. Alex Thomas. Like, your big, like, big top turnover guys. Like, outside of Lyndon Johnson, who had a couple of picks, and Gilbert had a couple. Like, you lose, like, a ton. Does that worry you very much? Or, like, do you have faith, like, they played enough guys last year where they could all bounce, like, fill in well? It's like Thomas and Stevens ended up being a nice combination.
I think the secondary played very well last year, despite not having a pass rush to speak of. I think this pass rush is going to be much better just because these guys, especially the defensive ends, they've garnered more experience. They should be better. And they have a defensive line coach who, by all accounts, is one of the rising stars in the profession at that position group. Al Washington, everybody raves about him. And they got the beast in the middle. You know, they got Cortez in there, who's going to solve a lot of problems, who's going to make things very easy for a lot of people because he has to be double-teamed every play. Everybody else gets one-on-one coverage. Beat your guy, you're there. Yeah, Cortez is drawing a double team every time. And that's going to help everybody. Especially, and like pairing him next to Marquise Copeland, who is an undersized, basically a rush defensive tackle, is a really good strategy. And that'll hopefully allow them to generate a little bit more pass rush. Because they have to, right? Like, it was a good secondary last year with no pass rush. If they're a little bit better, even if these guys aren't quite as experienced or up to speed as last year's group was in the secondary, just having a pass rush makes life easier for the secondary because now the quarterback doesn't have acres of space and seconds to spare. Now, he's under pressure. He has to make decisions on the fly. He doesn't have a whole vision of the field because, you know, after you get hit a few times, you stop looking downfield and you start looking at the line. And, you know, last year, no quarterback was scared of the defensive line. They just weren't paying attention. They were seeing right past them.
That's a very good point. Because it really starts up front. Like, you give quarterbacks time to pick you apart. Like, even, like, in the college game, they're going to find ways to pick you apart. Or the coaching staffs will find ways to get those guys open on those little underneath routes that turn into giant plays. Like, that's, especially with the wider hashes, really helped with that type of stuff in college.
There is not a defense alive that can cover receivers for 5 seconds. In college, you just can't. They just don't exist. You know, even Alabama can't cover for 5 seconds. They might be able to cover for 4, but they can't cover for 5.
I think we've seen that in, like, every big game they lost is because they get passed on like crazy.
Every big game they lost is because, with the exception of Clemson last year, it's because random shit happens. They are so not equipped to deal with random shit. And what is more random than playing a Hugh Freeze team or Johnny Manziel? That's about as random as college football gets. That's why they lost those games.
And we've seen, like, plenty of random things happen to the Bearcats, like losing to UConn.
I thought we agreed we weren't going to speak its name.
I apologize. Now, before we wrap this podcast up, Chris and I gave our game-by-game breakdowns last time. So it's your turn. I'll say the game, and you say how you think it will go. We'll skip Austin Peay since we gave our great preview. How do you feel about the Michigan game?
They play well for a quarter, and then it goes badly. I get to leave the stadium early and drive to my apartment early. That's how I think that game's going to go. I'm going to cash in that chip.
What percent chance do you give the Bearcats of going in there and like actually taking it down?
2. Like, it's not great. Like a lot, like this isn't even a vintage great Michigan team. Like they're kind of rebuilding, but a lot has to happen. Like a lot.
They need like Michigan to be really, really bad.
They need them to actively self-destruct. Not like not casually self-destruct, but like try to like turn the ball over 7 times in a quarter.
And this is the game that terrifies me with UC having like a pretty much brand new like punter and brand new like punt team. It's like if you watched the Michigan UCF game last year, they blocked like a million kicks in that game, and that kind of terrifies me.
Yes, but if they do block them, our new Aussie rules punter is very good at tackling.
Fair point. How do you feel about the Miami game? So we have UC at 1-1 going into Miami, the Victory Bell game. What's your prediction for this one?
I want to say win. I really do. But I think the streak ends.
Yeah, this was the hardest one, I think, Chris and I had to predict. It's like, we both, like, kind of lean the same way you did. I think we both picked them winning. But I don't know. Like, if Mike Miami is, like, actually legit coming off of last year, I think it's going to be a really tough game to win. And, like, the last time UC played well in Oxford was, like, I don't know, like, 8 years, like, 7, 8 years ago, it seems.
It's... probably 2007 was the last. No, yeah. Oh, well, 2009 was pretty breezy too, but I think those were the last two where they just kind of romped.
And like the last 2 years, they've been kind of fortunate to beat Miami.
No, they've been lucky the last 3 times. Travis Kelce had an enormous game. One of them just kind of blew up out of nowhere. That was a sign of things to come. But that, I think that was like his sophomore year.
Even that 2009 game, that game was really close, and UC broke away late, I think. Or I'm thinking of a different year. Never mind. Next point. At Navy.
I hope everybody brought extra knees. Like, nobody knows what Navy is, other than they're just Navy and they just plug in pieces and it works. Right. Yeah. But I think... the loss of their quarterback plus turning over, I think, most of their defense as well, that's gonna be bad. Right? But they're still gonna lose.
Now, the thing about Navy is, like, they, like, lose, like, arguably, like, their unarguably their best player in, like, their modern history.
Like, at least you gotta go back to Staubach to find anybody better.
Yeah. And that's in the past. It's like the 60s or whatever. Sorry, old people who listen to this for some reason. Like, then, like, they just plugged in, like, a guy from the stands, and, like, they ended up, like, winning the division somehow. Whatever, like, Ken Niumatalolo does is, like, weird magic. So, you have UC 1-3 coming out to Marshall. How do you feel about that game?
That should be a win. Pretty easily. Marshall is...
Do you buy any of the talk about like Marshall maybe being a bounce back team this season?
No. No, I think the Doc Holliday era is drawing to a close. Like, they already had their peak with those Cato teams were great. And even they didn't win the conference, right? Because they got upset by Western Kentucky on their way up, and now Western Kentucky is basically the funnest team in the history of fun. But yeah, like they're just, I don't know if they've even fielded a defense in like 6 years. And their offense isn't going to be much better. So that's kind of a problem. You know, declining to play one side of the ball and then not being as good on the other, that's an issue.
You have the Bearcats 2-3 as they kick into their conference home opener against Central Florida. A pretty ugly game last year. How do you see it going at Nippert?
I think this will be the turning point of the season where it starts to come together and they still lose. Like, they'll get down big early, and then the defense will have a stellar second half where they allow, like, no touchdowns and 50 yards and sacks whoever the quarterback is a million times, and they still lose. But that will be the launching point in my head.
It's an optimistic way of predicting them to lose.
I'm an optimistic person. I think everybody knows that. That is what I'm known for. It's like, oh, Matt, he's so optimistic. No one's like, oh, shit, that's a nihilist. Never heard that. Just now, that's the first time I've heard that about myself. Okay, that's a lie.
After a bye, you see you have them at 2-4 going into SMU, or with SMU coming to Cincinnati.
It went in a stupid game.
How much do you really buy into SMU this year?
I always buy into SMU under Boris being fun and stupid. That's pretty much their MO, fun and stupid.
Yeah.
How they beat Houston? By being fun and stupid.
I feel like SMU can actually win a road game. I'd be surprised. Up next, the game everybody thinks they'll lose besides Michigan is at South Florida. How do you feel?
I give them like a 25% chance.
That's not too bad.
No, I think they're just not going to win that game. They're not.
Do you have them at 3?
Unless there's massive injuries in South Florida, like there's just. I just don't see a way.
And, like, they've played South Florida pretty poorly the last few years, too.
We used to dominate the Bulls, and just been a house of horrors for, like, 4 years.
Like, maybe some of that was the coaching matchup, but not all of it.
We were the team that Willie Taggart saved his fucking job against. He was going to get fired, and then they blew us the fuck out. And they're like, we'll see what happens. Oh, now he's in Oregon. Yeah, how do you like that? How do you feel about your decision to not fire him now? Pretty good, because you got Charlie Strong. Never mind.
Up next, a tricky road game at Tulane.
The Fighting Willie Fritzes.
Another team that improved a lot last year, but
they should win. You basically describe the bottom half of the conference.
I think this is the only game that Chris and I were mixed about. And it was the game against Temple on a Friday night. What's your prediction for the Bearcats? Do you think they'll get closer to the 500 mark, or do you think they'll take loss number 6?
I think they'll take a loss. I really – like, when was the last time UC played well against Temple?
Like, 3 years ago, I would guess.
2011. It was the last time they played, like, a complete game against Temple.
Ooh, yeah, it had to be. It had to be, like, then, when Temple rejoined the league.
It's been a while, is all I'm saying.
That's like we saw like PJ Walker grow from somebody who was terrible to somebody who wasn't great, but still like beat UC like 3 times.
Yeah. Hey, but Matt Rule's gone. That's helpful.
Potentially helpful. The strive for bowl eligibility. It's at East Carolina and home against UConn. Do you think they'll make the drive to 6?
I think they make a bowl.
you buy into East Carolina being any better?
No. There are not sleeping giants in this league, but they are the sleeping giant of this league. They should be so much better than they are. They have a huge stadium. They have a rabid fan base. They fill that place all the time. They've knocked off more FCS, more Power 5 teams than anybody else in this league in the last 5 years.
That's like hell. They beat like two last year, then like completely fell apart.
Yes. But they're just hilariously inconsistent. And they could catch us on an off day, in which case we lose, and that sucks. And that ends the drive for five. But I just don't see it. Like, I think this UC team is going to be so much better down the stretch than they are to start the season, that I think they have enough momentum that they can weather an off performance on the road from a young team and still get to a ball game.
Okay, here's East Carolina's schedule. They have an easy win, so they'll be 1-0. Then they go to West Virginia, host Virginia Tech, host South Florida, host Temple, go to USF, host to BYU, go to Houston.
Ouch.
Do you think they have any real hopes of making a bowl game? Their last four, UConn, Tulane, Cincinnati, Memphis.
I don't think so. Yeah, that is the worst. That's like an FCS starting schedule. You know, where they're trying to rack up those paydays so that they can fund their athletic department for another year. That's what that reminds me of.
That is, and like even like they get all their hardest games at home, or not at home, but like at the beginning of the season.
Like didn't James Madison rob to a national title last year? Oh yeah, they did. They did.
I undersold James Madison. Apparently, if you click the matchup predictor, it's 63-35. So, or 63.5 to 36.5. So, yeah, that's almost a toss-up in itself.
No, that's not a toss. That's a loss. Oh, my God. Yeah, they're the team who ended the North Dakota State dynasty. They killed that thing dead. Yeah, it's not going to be great. Gonna be great. So yeah, 0-4 to start, and whew. I mean, they might win, and they do all the worst teams from the West. That's the best part.
That's like they don't even catch a break. Yeah, like Memphis and Houston like, on the road.
Yeah, no, they caught a break. It was Tulane. They caught that break.
That one break they caught.
Oh my god. I don't even see three wins there for them.
You almost forget how terribly they closed the season last year. Outside of their like destruction of UConn, they got blown out by Tulsa, blown out at home by SMU, blown out by Navy, blown out by Temple.
Yeah.
After nearly beating Cincinnati. Which is didn't really say a lot for last year's UC team. But they did beat them by double digits. So that says a lot. Like, even that 4-win UC team beat somebody by double digits.
Yeah, I don't think the future is bright for Scotty Montgomery.
East Carolina lost one game by single digits last year. And it was to South Carolina on a game that they should have won. Yeah, what a weird team. So East Carolina's definitely going to beat West Virginia and Virginia Tech and then lose the rest of their games.
They seem to always beat Virginia Tech, so I'll give them that.
So you finished 6-6. Chris and I both had 7-5, and we both picked almost the exact same thing. Like, their schedule like has a lot of toss-ups, but it seems like most of the toss-ups you definitely lean one way or the other. Like, Temple is a toss-up, but like just what we've seen from Temple recently, you would lean Temple. Then like some of the other, like Central Florida, like if you really believed in Scott Frost, you would think that would be a loss. But if you didn't, you would think that would be a win, just because their offense was so terrible last year.
I just pulled up Bill Conley's preview, and just looking at his win probabilities that he has with his system, all but three games are within 10 percentage points of 50%. So, like, they have, I think, 8 toss-ups by his reckoning of toss-ups. Oh, no, 7, sorry. That's not great. We'll see. See how that goes.
The error bars will definitely shrink as we play games, but yeah, it's going to make for a pretty stressful season.
No, it's not a stressful season, because there's no existential threat hanging over everyone's head like there was last year, when the thought was still in a lot of people's heads that they might keep Tuberville.
Oh, okay, yeah. We don't have
until about October.
Yeah, we don't have a crisis hanging over our heads, like them being too cheap to fire Tuberville. But like once the game starts, people get really upset about everything. So people lose perspective.
Are you saying that people are sometimes mad on the internet? That's nonsense.
No, I'm saying fans are always perfectly rational, and nobody ever loses their minds.
That's very true. Great words of wisdom to go out on.
So by the time we join you next week, there'll be football.